Welcome to Behind the Headlines. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce with the Salt Lake Tribune. Today on the program, we've got bills, we've got speeches, we've got air quality and much more. And joining me in studio, environmental reporter Emma Penrod is here. Hi, Emma.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. City Hall reporter Christopher Smart is in the house as well. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Editorial writer George Pyle joins us once again. Good morning, George.
Good morning.
And joining us by phone, Tribune senior political reporter Robert Gerke. And Robert, hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Doing well. And you are welcome to join us, too. What headlines caught your attention this week? You can put comments on the website, sltrib.com. You can also tweet us to the hashtag TribTalk or call us. 801-355-TALK is the number, 801-355-8255. Robert, the state of the state was delivered this week. The legislature got underway. You've been very busy. Let's start with Governor Herbert's remarks. He delivered his sixth State of the State address. What were some of the major themes that he gave during this this address?
Well, I mean, the themes were very similar to the themes that were, you know, that he articulated in his previous States of the State. You know, he focused extensively on education and the money that they've invested in education in the past several years, called on the legislature and the education system to reduce the dropout rate even further. He wants to get the graduation rate from 85% to 90% over the next 4 years. He talked about air quality and you know, said that, you know, while emissions have been reduced, it was small consolation to people when they, you know, look outside and see the smog and the haze. He talked a little bit about public lands. He touched briefly on health care, Medicaid expansion, and noted that even though they failed to do it in the past, it's not an issue that's going away, and they need to get it done. But overall, I mean, as these speeches generally are, they focused on the positive, the things that the governor felt like he has accomplished in his six and a half years since he took office. And were you know, was generally well received by the Republican legislature. That Democrats felt like there should have been more said about education and more said about sort of the failure of the middle class to enjoy the recovery from the recession that, you know, obviously was pretty devastating to the economy 6-7 years ago.
He got quite emotional at one point talking about local law enforcement. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, he was. Excuse me. During the speech, he talked about the funeral service for Officer Barney, who was shot recently while he was on duty, and he talked about sort of the way that he exemplified the things that are best about Utah and the way the community came together, and he got choked up about it a little bit, in sort of, you know, talking about just, as he put it, what a remarkable place Utah is. And so it was a moment of emotion, I guess, in a speech that, you know, you don't often see that in these speeches because they are, you know, they've rehearsed them and gone over them repeatedly, and he did get a little choked up when he was talking about Officer Barney and that service that was Monday, I guess, this week.
Content wise, how did Governor Herbert's remarks compare to the opening remarks by House Speaker Greg Hughes and Senate President Wayne Niederhauser earlier in the week?
Yeah, well, both of them actually commented on how the content, the priorities that were espoused by the governor were very much in line with those that they articulated and those that are shared by the Republican legislature. I think the one point that maybe Speaker Hughes hit more strongly than Governor Herbert did was the transfer of public lands lawsuit. It's something that Speaker Hughes said that seems to be ripe and ready to go. The governor sort of was more He didn't specifically reference this lawsuit that the state's looking at to try to claim ownership of millions of acres of public land. He didn't specifically reference the lawsuit. He talked more about the public lands initiative to build that Congressman Bishop and Congressman Chaffetz are working on to sort of resolve some of these land disputes in a handful of Utah counties. So that was probably the primary difference. I asked Speaker Hughes about why he thought that was, and he said he thinks at this point, at least, it's an issue that the legislature is sort of more teed up, I guess, for the legislature. Because right now, where it stands is that the legislature has to decide if it wants to appropriate the up to $14 million to handle this litigation. The governor is reviewing the legal brief that has been prepared by the outside attorneys, and he and Attorney General Reyes are going to be the ones to decide whether to file it. But Speaker Hughes said this is an issue that right now, at least, is in the legislature's court, and so he thinks that's why maybe the governor didn't focus on it quite as much as he did in his opening remarks.
Speaking with Salt Lake Tribune reporter Robert Gerke, and again, if you want to join us, the number 801-355-TALK, or you can put comments at sltrib.com. Let's turn to some of the issues that the legislature is talking about this week. Adoption. Representative Craig Powell caused a bit of a stir with an adoption bill. And Robert, what's the story?
Well, so for a number of years, I think going back almost 20 years now, the state has had a prohibition against individuals or unmarried couples adopting children who are in the custody of the state. So, for example, if a single person wanted to adopt, they couldn't do that. And the reason they set it up that way is because they were trying to prevent gay couples from being able to adopt children. With the Supreme Court rulings in the past year, that was no longer the policy of the state. The law was changed, and they were, you know, same-sex couples, gay couples, married couples were allowed to adopt. Representative Powell is going through the code and changing a number of references from husband and wife to couple or spouse or to make it more compliant with the Supreme Court rulings. This was one area where he said he thinks the policy of the state should give a preference to traditional male-female couples. And so he's going to be introducing a bill that would sort of articulate that, I guess, and embed that in Utah code where, you know, that all other things being equal, essentially, that the preference be given to a male-female married couple rather than a gay couple or a single person. And so this is, you know, it's kind of going back to what the policy was, or trying to go back to the extent that they can to what the policy was before the Supreme Court rulings. Equality Utah was quick to jump on it and say it's discriminatory and unconstitutional, that gay couples should be treated exactly the same under the law and as traditional male-female couples. And that was, in their eyes, the point of the Supreme Court ruling, is that, you know, same-sex couples have all the same rights as anyone else. Representative Romero has a bill on the same topic that would sort of articulate that would make that the law, that any couple is treated the same as any other couple when it comes to adoption and foster care. Representative Powell's reasoning, as he explained it, was that he thinks it's better for children to have male and female role models in the home, and again, all other things being equal, he thinks that's the preferable arrangement for a child.
George Pyle, from the editorial page. Certainly you have opinions on this.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Share them, please.
I mean, sometimes this is just like the Editorial Writers Full Employment Act, whenever the legislature's in session. And this really came as kind of a shock to us. I didn't think anybody was going to touch this. I mean, it was obvious the Supreme Court opinion was very clear, is that you can't treat same-sex couples differently from opposite-sex couples. The argument that children do better with heterosexual parents than they do with homosexual parents has been examined by federal courts all the way up and specifically labeled as garbage. I don't think they use the word garbage, but some judicial term that means the same thing. They have laughed it out of court in multiple jurisdictions. It's dead. And the only reason that you could I mean, it makes as much sense as passing a law that says that the preference should be, you know, white Mormon couples who make more than $100,000 a year, because you could argue that a child adopted into such a home is going to have a better shot at life. They're going to have education. They're going to have contacts. They're going to have the, they're going to be in the system. They're going to know people. And it's not what you know. It's who you know anywhere you live. And so you should give those kinds of preferences, too. You shouldn't have interracial couples. You shouldn't have couples who are struggling to get by, because that's not as good a deal. You know, you should be placed with rich families, you know, rich, white, straight. And in Utah, it'd be Mormon. In other states, it would be Baptist or Methodist or whatever the big religion is. It makes about as much sense. And no court will stand for this, and it's a huge waste of the legislature's time. And I really am surprised that this sponsor, who has struck us in the past as rather more intelligent than that, would take that up.
Robert, did Representative Powell, who I believe is a lawyer, did he talk about the constitutional issues with his proposal at all?
Well, he said that the Supreme Court ruled specifically on marriage and ruled that that was a right. He doesn't think that adoption and foster care parentage is necessarily a resolved issue. He acknowledged that if this bill passes, it would likely be challenged in court by, you know, one of a couple that wants to adopt and is denied that. But he thinks that, you know, while the court ruled that marriage is a right, that maybe adoption and foster care isn't a constitutional right, that and the court might rule differently on this.
I don't see how you can have read the Kennedy decision and think that. I mean, they very specifically said that the argument against gay marriage, about the only argument they have left against gay marriage, is that it's bad for children. And the Supreme Court rejected that. They just flat laughed it out of court. And so did the federal court in Michigan, and so did the federal court in Utah. Utah hired this expert, these out-of-town experts, to tell us that that was what we hung our hat on in Utah, to say, yeah, okay, maybe the adults, it's okay for them to get married, but think of the children, and which usually, yeah, is what liberals say. Now it's the conservatives are saying it. And it was specifically rejected.
Yeah, and that's the point Equality Utah was making, is that there's an equal protection argument to be made on this, that if you are going to have people, if the court has ruled that gay couples are allowed to marry, then they're married couples, and that they're entitled to the same protection and same rights and protections under the law that any other couple might be. So that's the argument that is coming from the other side, and I think George's point is valid, and that if, you know, based on the decision that the Supreme Court handed down, it does seem like a difficult argument to make, to say, well, yeah, you're married, but you're not, you know, you don't get all of the rights that, you know, this other male female married couple would have. So
I was just going to say, it's certainly going to launch a lot of debate, I would imagine, on the Hill. We need to move on to a couple other topics before I let you go, Robert. Medical marijuana. You said that the governor mentioned it in his State of the State. Lawmakers are considering two bills that would legalize medical marijuana. Describe the different approaches, just briefly.
Yeah, the Mark Manson bill is what they call a whole plant bill. It would allow people who are suffering from a list of these ailments, cancer, HIV, things like that, to get a recommendation to use products that contain THC. That's one of the active chemicals that's in the marijuana plant. It's what gets you high, basically. and so the Madsen bill would allow that, and it would also allow for parents to use these products for their children, to treat their children, and would give protections to people who do that, who are using the products or using the product to treat their children. The other bill, excuse me, sponsored by Representative Daw and Senator Vickers, is more narrow. It sort of expands this cannabidol bill that was passed a couple of years ago. These are oils that are do not contain THC or very trace amounts, and have been used to treat epilepsy and other things in children. And so it's a much narrower bill, has a narrower list of diseases that can be treated. and also wouldn't apply to children. And so it's they call it sort of an incremental step. It's what they think they can get done this session. So those are sort of the two proposals that are on the table right now.
And then finally, the governor also touched on Medicaid expansion. It was his plan was unsuccessful. Do you see an appetite from lawmakers this time around? Are there any bills that would provide some a different idea, but still provide health coverage for the poor?
Well, there are members that are going to be bringing back. Representative Ward, for example, is bringing back Healthy Utah, and Senator Shizawa is bringing back a Medicaid expansion proposal that would cover those up to the poverty level and not above, and it would require permission, I guess, a waiver from the Obama administration. I was talking to President Niederhauser the other day, and he said that he believes that they'll do something, but he thinks what will probably pass is a bill that is being put together by Representative Dunnigan. And Representative Jim Dunnigan's bill would essentially cover a very sort of small subset of those who are under poverty, basically the poorest of the poor, the people who make the least. He thinks that would cover people with mental health disorders. It would cover people with addiction issues. It would cover people who are unable to work. And so he wants to sort of start at the neediest of the needy, I guess. And try to get some data and see what the experience is there. This wouldn't really be a full Medicaid expansion. It wouldn't be even a partial Medicaid expansion. It would be because the state would not get the full federal match. It would get about 20% fewer federal dollars for that match than it would if it did the full expansion. But he thinks it's a starting point, and the leadership seems to think that that's what they can realistically accomplish this session.
George, the Salt Lake Tribune editorial board has been impatient on this issue, to say the least. I mean, what do you think about a starting point bill, incremental coverage?
Well, I mean, what they want to do is spend more state money to cover fewer people. Because the only thing they really want to do is diss Barack Obama. They want to make sure that his signature legislation does not help anybody in Utah. And that's the only rational reason for any of this. I mean, I know if they say that isn't it, but if they woke up tomorrow morning and said, you know what, I really hate poor people, I really hate Barack Obama, my only reason for being in the legislature is to make sure that poor people don't get helped. If that was their new rationale, how would their behavior change? It would not. It would be exactly the same as it is now. So my advice to people living in Utah who are in the gap or below poverty level is to move to Louisiana, because they just elected a new governor, and the first thing he did was put in Obamacare after 8 years of Bobby Jindal representing what he himself called the stupid party. In not doing it. They elected a new governor in Kentucky. He said he was going to get rid of Obamacare, and then he didn't, because he realized how stupid it would be to do that. The governor the other night, in his address, he mentioned health care. He gave the obligatory rap to the deeply flawed Affordable Care Act, which mostly is deeply flawed because he was honest enough to admit the Supreme Court decision that took out the mandatory part of Medicaid expansion. Absent that, we would have expanded Medicaid in Utah 3 years ago, and we wouldn't be having this argument. But it was just sad. I mean, the governor basically said, you know, we really ought to do something about this. And even though those speeches are short because they don't want him to bleed into prime time and 30,000 feet overviews, it was just like, I give up. And it was really kind of sad. Yeah. I give up. You guys do something. All right. And he said, to the governor's credit, he said, we're talking about real people here. Not just statistics, not just politics. There are real people out here who need help. He tried to help them with Healthy Utah. He tried to help them with Utah Access Plus. He got the hospitals. He got the churches. He got the Chamber of Commerce to all come out for him. And but the House, in secret session, wouldn't go for it.
Robert, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that the governor has kind of said, well, you know, he's got his plan. He still likes Healthy Utah, but it's not going to, you know, the politics of it are such that it's not going to pass. So he's sort of letting the legislature take the lead on this now. And I think that's where you'll see this Dunnigan bill emerge and these other proposals be debated, at least, if not passed.
Okay. Robert Gerke from the Salt Lake Tribune, we'll let you get back to work on Capitol Hill. Thanks so much for being with us.
All right. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too. You're listening to Behind the Headlines on KCPW in Salt Lake City, throughout the state on Utah Public Radio. We need to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Programming on Utah Public Radio is made possible in part by our members and Logan Regional Hospital Nutrition Services, helping people live a healthier life through programs directed to prevent diabetes and heart disease. Information at loganregional.org.
I'm going through what I like to refer to as a surprise divorce, and I just need some grace and patience from the world right now. I am broken glass on the inside.
Join us for more true stories told live. This week, Spirit Animals, Subway Rage, Romeo, Juliet, and a Clown. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Join us Saturday night at 6 on Utah Public Radio.
Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pearson, joined in studio by Chris Smart, Emma Penrod, and George Pyle of the Salt Lake Tribune. Again, if you want to join our conversation about the week's news, you can tweet us. Hashtag is TribTalk. You can comment on the website, sltrib.com, or you can call us. 801-355-TALK is that number. Emma, the Environmental Protection Agency held a series of hearings, public hearings this week. You were there for pretty much all of it. What was the purpose of the hearings?
So the hearings were in regard to the EPA's pending decision on Utah's regional haze plan. Now, the regional haze plan is a part of the Clean Air Act that says that in our national parks and other significant monuments and similar areas, we will achieve natural air conditions is what it says by the year 2064. And then it says, okay, states, come up with a plan to do this. So Utah, like every other state, has written a plan that says that, you know, determines how they're going to attempt to do this. And the EPA has created an interesting situation here where normally the EPA would approve or disapprove the state's plan. And if they disapprove the state plan, the EPA comes in with its own plan. Well, late last year, the EPA came out with a split decision that said, we're not sure what we're going to do. We could either approve the state's plan in the entirety, or we could disapprove parts of the state plan and replace it with parts of our own plan. The fundamental difference is that the EPA's plan would require the installation of additional pollution controls at some central Utah power plants. Utah's plan doesn't require that. It says that there's already been enough control put in. So that was what the hearing was all about. The EPA came out and said, okay, Utahns, we want to know which plan you prefer. That's an unusual move, but it's not without precedent. So,
well, Utahns showed up. And if you go to sltrib.com, you will see pictures of the crowd spilling out of Salt Lake City Library's fourth floor. There was not enough room in that space to accommodate everyone. Can you describe the various constituencies who showed up and what was their message to the EPA?
Yeah, there was an estimated 500 people who came to the meeting. They estimate about 200 actually spoke or commented on. They had comment cards that they were handing out to everyone. And it was interesting. It was a very divided crowd, and it was actually quite evenly divided, although there were different segments where you'd have a long time from one group and a long time from another group. But the primary factions were either for. One faction was for the Utah plan, and the other faction was for the EPA's plan. And somewhat predictably, I suppose, the people for the state plan were coal miners, people who worked at the power plants, locals down from central Utah, various industry advocates. And then on the other side, you had the clean air advocates, the environmentalists, the state and national parks representatives, Salt Lake City residents. And these were very divided groups. It was interesting. It almost didn't sound like they were even talking about the same issue sometimes.
Hmm. Did they use different terms, different language? What do you mean?
I mean, they used different perspectives to the extent that one group was like, our air is fine. We don't have a problem. Come down and meet us and see and see that we don't need to do anything. And the other group was like, what are you talking about? We're all dying. Yeah.
George Pyle, what strikes you about this exchange?
Well, I mean, it's almost like nobody's occupying a federal facility anyplace, but it's kind of in the same vein. People see coal, King Coal, going away. And they're doing everything they can to stand and say, look, this is how we've built our lives. This is how we've fed our families all these years. Please don't tell us we can't do this anymore. And while it's mostly overall, globally, it's not just environmental concerns. It's also just economics. Natural gas is so much cheaper. And coal, whether you add environmental controls on it or not, is becoming too expensive to run. Now they're so concerned that the regulations will mean we won't be able to mine coal anymore. We won't be able to run this power plant anymore, or the power companies will decide that they put so many restrictions and it costs so much money to run this power plant that they'll just give up and not run the power plant. Or they'll spend a lot of money to convert it to natural gas. We'll still have the power, but coal miners won't have jobs anymore, and they're trying to hang on to that. And you know, a valid enough point is you go out and you stand around, and it's not an inversion. It's not the Wasatch Front. It doesn't look like Salt Lake City looks on an inversion day. So, but then you get to the question of, well, is just looking at it enough? Shouldn't you be taking samples and analyzing the air and counting the nitrous oxide and the sulfur oxide and all these other things? And plus, there is this specific law that says, we're really worried about national parks and wilderness, and we want to make sure, to the extent we can, that when you come and look at that, it looks like it looked before we started burning all this coal. You should see what it really looks like. And that's in addition to worrying about cases of asthma and all these other things. We want our national parks to look like they're supposed to look, and we will take steps, and we will spend money, and we will make other people spend money in order to see to it that happens.
Hmm. Emma, how did the EPA react to the crowd?
Well, in this kind of hearing, there is no interchange between the people who are speaking at the hearing and the people from the EPA who are just there to take comment.
So they didn't ask questions, follow-up questions,
no,
nothing. Okay.
No, they don't respond. They just sit there at a desk and write things down.
What about state air quality officials? Were they surprised by the turnout at all, or were they kind of expecting it?
I honestly, I don't know. I haven't asked them about it. It's been more of a national issue.
Okay. Well, is the comment period over at this point?
No, the comment period will remain open until mid-March, I believe. And that is, you can send them letters, you can email them. There's a comment form online, I believe, on the EPA has a whole website dedicated to this. So you can still submit comments there. They just won't have any more public hearings. This was the only public hearing.
Oh, it was. And I suppose that was a point of contention. Why are they holding this in Salt Lake City as opposed to a more rural area?
Yes, that was something that was frequently brought up throughout the hearing, especially from people who had come in from central Utah. They felt that it was unfair that the EPA had, you know, held this series of hearings, and there was more than one hearing officially. They just were all on the same day in the same place in Salt Lake City. They felt that the EPA should have come down to central Utah at some point and offered these people more of a chance to speak for their community, because they felt like holding it in Salt Lake gave people from Salt Lake that other group of people that were concerned about clean air and the environment, that it gave them the opportunity to be overrepresented, and gave the locals who are more concerned about the future of their jobs and their economy, an underprivileged stance of being underrepresented, that they weren't able to bring up as more people as they like. So they felt that the hearing was not representative of the true nature of the situation.
Interesting. Well, no. If you want more detail, go online to sltrib.com. George, I'm sorry.
We had some people from the DAQ and the DEQ in a talk at the editorial board a couple of weeks ago, and they seem pretty confident that their proposal that doesn't require as much of the power companies is logical, because they've worked it out. in great detail with nomenclature that I don't understand, and that the cost that the EPA or other people might want of what would the pollution controls that would have to be put on the power plant would be so great for, in the state's opinion, very little benefit. That's something that is beyond my pay grade is when it comes to actually doing the math on that. But that is a big point of contention.
Well, again, check out sltrib.com for lots of reporting on air quality. I want to move to one other environmental issue that cropped up this week. The Lake Powell pipeline is once again on the table. And Emma, for those who aren't familiar, just a little bit of background about this water project.
Well, this is a water project that has been approved by the Utah State Legislature as a state water project. It proposes to build a pipeline from Lake Powell to Washington and Kane counties to deliver some of Utah's right to the water in that Lake Powell and in that river system into these growing communities that the state contends are maxing out their potential for water development in those areas.
And one of the big points of contention, at least discussed this week, is money. A Senate committee discussed funding, and how much money are we talking about?
That is a tricky question with the Lake Powell pipeline. That is the million-dollar question everyone wants to know right now, is how much money are we talking about? The state says that they've promised to build the project, but that Washington and Kane counties have promised to pay for the project, and therefore that it's their job to come up with the cost estimate, which we haven't seen yet. The ballpark range is about $1 billion.
$1 billion. Okay. Lots of concern over that price tag. The public, incidentally, shares some of those concerns according to our Tribune Hinckley Institute of Politics poll. What are the numbers, Emma?
So about 51% of the respondents in that poll said that they weren't sure whether they supported the Lake Powell pipeline because they didn't know what it would cost. It's not that they're in the dark. Nobody is sure what it will cost yet.
Okay. So where does the conversation go from here?
I understand that Washington County says they are working on a cost estimate. They say they're working on a plan to pay that down. They just say they're not ready to reveal that to the public yet. Some environmental groups have asked to see that. They have grammared. They've requested the documents behind those calculations, and they've been told that no paperwork exists yet. So I think we're all waiting to get that official cost estimate.
And some of the other people who are worried about this kind of thing have done the best they can to run the numbers and how much it might cost. And if you do accept the premise that the state will build it, but the users will pay for it, the amount the users would have to pay, according to these calculations, is just astronomical. Their water bills would have to go way up. I don't remember the figures, but it's a huge amount of money. The impact fees or the tap fees, the initial connection fees that you have to pay to hook on a new house or a new business would just be huge. And of course, sort of the irony of that is that that's the best way to get people to conserve water, is to charge a lot for it. And maybe we ought to be conserving water instead of building huge pipelines. So it gets kind of circular. And then you get to the point of thinking, well, with climate change and everything else, you might build a $1 billion pipeline and there might not be any water in it because there's not enough water at one end and there's not enough money at the other.
So many questions. Again, if you're confused, sltrib.com. We've got some great reporting there. Let's move on to local politics. Christopher Smart, Jackie Biskupski, gave her first State of the City address as Salt Lake City mayor. For those who didn't hear the speech, what were some of the highlights?
Well, it was a wide-ranging speech, everything from soup to nuts. She is, she's really taking city government by storm. She's talking about a major realignment in my mind, and we've seen that recently in some personnel changes. We saw veteran public utilities director Jeff Niermeyer leave. We've seen veteran public service director Rick Graham leave. We've seen the RDA executive DJ Baxter leave, and others. The most surprising thing to me in the speech was that she was going to elevate the Division of Economic Development, which has been under Community and Economic Development. She's gonna raise that to a department level. And then the director of that department would oversee economic development, but also the RDA, arts and culture, and colleges and universities. So this person, whoever it's going to be, will be sort of the czar of economic development in Salt Lake City and will have tremendous power. And the reason that Biskupski's doing this, she sort of outlined in her speech, was that, you know, Salt Lake is not the tech center that Utah County is, and that she sees this as a missed opportunity because we have a lot of talent right here in town coming out of our colleges and universities, and they're going to tech companies elsewhere. So she wants to stop that. And so she also outlined a new sort of system within City Hall, which is sort of a bottom-up system. She calls the employees that are out doing the hands-on work, she calls them experts. And she wants to hear from them in how the city government can work better rather than just somebody in an office at City Hall saying we're going to do this and that and the other.
How are people at City Hall adjusting to the change? I mean, this is a lot of change, and change can be difficult.
They're not really adjusting. I mean, the whole thing is sort of in flux now. There are a lot of people over there who are disappointed that some folks have left. There are a lot of people over there who aren't sure whether they're staying or not. And this, you know, the voters voted for change, and they're getting it. And, you know, some have said recently with the departures of some of these guys I mentioned is that there may be a little bit of buyer's remorse out there. But this is really an aggressive mayor making changes in City Hall. And she is, you know, she's got the pedal to the metal, and that's her reputation. She's going to do something very dynamic, and how it turns out, we don't know yet.
George Pyle, the Tribune editorial board was an early supporter of Jackie Biskupski, endorsing her in this race. What do you think so far?
Well, she's certainly trying to put her own stamp on everything, as Chris says. And at the local level, I think people sometimes forget, because we don't change parties, it's not technically a partisan election. And from Rocky Anderson to Ralph Becker to Jackie Biskupski has not been Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative change. It's been pretty much the same party, even though technically there isn't any party. So maybe it's a little bit surprising that department heads get thrown out when a new mayor comes in. It's not like a Republican replacing a Democrat and you just expect the department heads to change. So a lot of people have been thinking that, well, that's really mean. These guys have served the city well for a long time through multiple mayors. You know, how dare you fire them? They're not on the take. They're not crooked. They're just not your people. So you want to put in your own people. But these people serve at the pleasure of the mayor. And we have a new mayor, and she has every right to put in her own people. And, you know, everybody gets a little hinky when they hear about anybody losing their job, because that scares everybody. You feel some sympathy for anybody who loses their job. And so they're worried about that. But she has every right to put in her own people. And Rocky Anderson has been mad that, you know, she came in and asked for all these resignations and then decided which ones to accept. Presidents do that. Governors do that. CEOs do that. It's a little blunt, maybe, but she had every right to do that. And we did vote for change, and we did want something different. And everybody who was mad at Ralph Becker about whether it was parking meters or bicycle lanes or golf courses, I mean, these people were all part of that implementation of things that maybe we didn't like. So I probably make some sense to get the new whole team in there. Maybe it could have been done a little more nicely, but that's the way we're going.
Chris Marr, is the purging over?
Well, We don't know, but I would guess not, because the mayor has about 110 appointments she can make. The rest of the 3,000 employees of Salt Lake City are merit employees and can't be dismissed unless they, you know, screw up real bad. And so, yeah, I mean, there are things that are going to happen. We don't know, however, who she's going to keep and who she's not going to keep. And there are some, you know, there are some big offices that are still, you know, but we haven't seen change. But those folks don't know. Mm-hmm. They don't know if they're staying or going. But she's, you know, Jackie's been in office for 4 weeks. And, you know, what she is doing, this sort of reorganization she's doing, is going to take time. And I think we want to just snap our fingers and have it done. But, you know, this is going to take time. And so she's focusing on the reorganization. And so I don't expect to see any visible changes in Salt Lake City outside City Hall in the first 100 days. I mean, the first 100 days is going to be just reorganizing. I mean, she did retain Gina Chamness, who is the sort of the financial guru in charge of the budget, and so we won't see the budget till the first week of May. And you know, there's a lot of flux. And there's also, we're going to see in the next week or two, the city council is going to have an advise and consent hearing for Mike Rehberg, who's been appointed to replace Jeff Niermeyer at Public Utilities. There's some pushback. People aren't sure that Mike Rehberg has the expertise to deal with Salt Lake City's water issues and watershed issues.
In addition to the restructure, the mayor put air quality as a top priority. What's her approach to confronting the
issue?
Well,
the Division of Sustainability was also raised to department level, and job number one for that division will be air. And so the air quality, as we all know, there's no silver bullet. I mean, we know we have to reduce auto traffic. We know we have to reduce emissions from buildings. And it's going to be... It's going to take a whole host of fixes to improve our air. And heretofore, I mean, we've got the mass transit certainly has made a difference. But the legislature, it isn't really that interested in helping. I mean, they give lip service to it. But when the rubber meets the road, they're not willing to do it. There's a bill that would change building codes to reduce the pollution from buildings. That's up this time at the ledge, and Salt Lake City will send its lobbyists up there. And I don't know. You know, I wouldn't bet for it.
We've only got a couple minutes left before we need to take another break. But she did talk about the city's plan for addressing homelessness. She also has some plans for the city's police department, including an independent counsel for the Police Civilian Review Board. That's something new, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, that was surprising to me because the Civilian Review Board depends on folks within City Hall to sort of guide it. And that was, I think, a weakness in the review board. This would give it more autonomy and more transparency. So that was really something that took me by surprise.
I guess you're all for more transparency, George.
Well, that was always our knock on Ralph Becker, is that even when he had good ideas, and even when he did things that, you know, 20 years from now we'll wonder how we ever lived without, it did seem to be pretty opaque, and it was kind of all inside, and we know better, and we'll fix it. And this is a big step, I think, in saying, look, there's a matter of doing the right thing, and there's a matter of people seeing that you're doing the right thing. And having an outside counsel for this review board is a big step in that direction.
Mm. We've got to take another break. We're talking about Utah's top stories. We'll be right back. You're listening to Behind the Headlines on KCPW Salt Lake City, throughout the state on Utah Public Radio.
It is clear that communities in northern Utah, the Uinta Basin, and Utah County need to clean up the air out there. So why do we continue to idle our cars, take short trips around the neighborhood, and avoid public transportation? Utah Public Radio wants to know what it will take to get you to take action. The conversation continues. Share your insight at upr.org.
This week in This American Life, the host of a conservative call-in show on a Christian station in South Carolina was stunned lately when one caller after another told him that they were not supporting Ted Cruz like he is. Their candidate? Trump.
I can't explain that. This is not who we are. I thought I was doing somebody else's talk show, that they'd switch frequencies on me and not told me.
Trump changes everything this week.
Join us Saturday morning at 11 on Utah Public Radio.
Final segment, the underplayed story of the week. And Chris Smart, what's your pick?
Well, I was going to go with this Death Wish Coffee Company, a little company out of New York that won an ad on TV during the Super Bowl,
yeah,
which must be worth $1 million or so. But I just wanted to comment on the debate on Capitol Hill about suing to take the public lands back and what happened in Oregon this month. I can't help but to think that this sort of talk on the Hill sort of finds support among these militia members who want to take it a step farther.
All right. Commentary from Christopher Smart. Very good. MFN Rod, what's your pick?
So I guess I sat in too many long hearings this week, but I was greatly amused to read just this short bit about a carjacking gone awry when the thief discovered that he couldn't drive a stick and was therefore unable to drive the vehicle which he had just stolen. This allowed the driver of the vehicle, who I guess he had held at knife point, to get in his friend's vehicle and call the police and stop the whole thing before anything happened. I thought it was entertaining.
The stick shift, it's a lost art, isn't it? George Pyle?
Well, I don't know if this was underplay, but I found it fascinating. The 30th anniversary of the destruction of the Challenger space shuttle, our colleague Tom Harvey had a great story about the would-be whistleblowers here at Morton Thiokol. You know, if you've just seen The Martian and you've seen about how they listened to the people down the way who figured it out and knew what to do and knew how to save this guy and went around the blocks to save this guy, here's kind of the downer antidote to that. There were people at Morton Thiokol saying, don't launch, and they launched anyway. And Tom Harvey recounts that very well. Take a look, sltrib.com.
sltrib.com. And it's hard to believe that was 30 years ago.
I'm old.
All right. George Pyle, Emma Penrod, and Christopher Smart of the Salt Lake Tribune. Thanks, everybody, for your time, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
We're going to wrap up this week with Tribune columnist Robert Kirby. And this week, Kirby talks Sundance. Time when you got to have black leather and fur and all sorts of crazy boots, right?
No, stiletto heels in the snow. Yeah, they wear everything up there. It doesn't seem to matter. Of course, they're usually only traveling from a limousine to the venue, you know,
right,
which is a total distance of about 30 feet.
Not the way that we travel, right, Kirby?
Right. Definitely not.
Have you had personal experience with Sundance?
Oh, yeah. I go every year, ride with the police department up there, and that's where you see the really crazy stuff. And it's usually not the celebrities. In fact, it rarely is the celebrities causing the problem. The problem comes from all the gawkers who go up there, and they'll climb over the top of each other to get a glimpse of Paris Hilton or somebody like that.
You wrote a great column about an incident where someone was really straining for a celebrity sighting.
Oh, yeah. In 2008, I wrote, on Saturday, I may have seen Robert De Niro's shoulder in the 500 block of Park City's Main Street. Truthfully, it happened so fast that it could have been Robert Redford's knee or even just a hat belonging to one of Paris Hilton's backup gynecologists. I wasn't trying to see a celebrity. I went to the festival to watch the celebrity watchers. At that particular moment, some woman hauling three dogs wearing snow boots through the crowd on leashes. Suddenly, someone pointed at a nearby doorway and shouted, "Oh my God, I think that's De Niro." In the ensuing rush, I was violently rubbed to the back of the crowd and squeezed out onto the street. De Niro, or possibly Barack Obama, got into a car and was driven away.
Certainly a circus atmosphere up there at times, isn't
it? It is. I mean, you can see people running up the street because they heard that, you know, a celebrity is coming out of a venue. But then there are those moments where you realize how old you are. David Crosby from Crosby, Stills & Nash was playing at one of the venues, and the officer I was with was really young. And he said somebody came by and told us that Crosby was up at the venue and we should go there and see him. And the officer turned and looked at me and said, "I didn't even know Bill Cosby had a band." So that's, you know, how plugged in he was to it. But there was a strange part in that particular Sundance in where someone had recognized me from my picture in the newspaper.
Ah, so you're a celebrity.
Yeah, I guess. She asked if she could take a picture of me with her two sons. And so I said, "Sure, that's fine." And so I put my arms around her sons and she took our picture. But what was interesting is it seemed to slow traffic around us as suddenly everybody's looking at me wondering who I am. You know, is that Wilford Brimley? And then they started taking our pictures. And I realized that eventually my picture was going to go back to all the countries these people were from, where they'd spend the next 10 years trying to figure out who the hell I was.
That's Salt Lake Tribune columnist Robert Kirby. And you can find the entire Kirby archive online, sltrib.com. That's it for this edition of Behind the Headlines, a production of KCPW, Utah Public Radio, and the Salt Lake Tribune. Thanks to Jesse Ellis at KCPW, Tom Williams and Bennett Purser at UPR, and Emily Means from the Salt Lake Tribune. A programming note, the Salt Lake Tribune again has teamed up with the Utah Humanities, KCPW, and Utah Public Radio. We've been awarded a joint grant through the Pulitzer Prize Board as part of its 100-year anniversary of the Pulitzer Prizes. It's called the Campfires Initiative. And to kick us off, we are talking with Pulitzer Prize finalist Pat Bagley. That, of course, is our Tribune editorial cartoonist. We have an event with Pat Bagley coming up next week, February 3rd. That's Wednesday, 7 p.m. at the Leonardo here in Salt Lake City. And tickets are $10. You can find a lot more information at sltrib.com. If you can't make it, you can watch it on sltrib.com. We'll have live streaming video. Or you can hear a rebroadcast of the event here on KCPW. I believe the broadcast time is February 12th. At any rate, we hope you can join us an evening with Pat Bagley. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce with the Salt Lake Tribune. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week.
On this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Donald Trump says he'll stare down Vladimir Putin and intimidate the Ayatollah. But Megyn Kelly? Everyone has their limits. This week, Trump won't be in the same room as his GOP rivals, but Richard Dreyfuss has acquiesced to appearing on our show. I'm Mike Pesca, filling in for Peter Sagal. This week, don't skip out on the news quiz from NPR.
Join us Saturday morning at 9 on Utah Public Radio.
This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 Logan, KUSK HD1 Vernal, KUSL HD1 Richfield, KUST HD1 Moab, KCEU Price, and KUSU FM HD1 Logan.
A service of the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Utah State University. This is Utah Public Radio. The time now is 10 o'clock.